a plink. Rincewind stared into the depths of the cave. The light from the staffs only made them worse. It cast shadows. Darkness was just darkness, but anything could be hiding in shadows. "These caves must have been explored," he said. It was a hope rather than a statement. History here was rather a rubbery thing.
"Never heard of them," said the Dean.
"Points again, look," said Bill as they advanced. "Just stalactites and stalagmites," said Rincewind. "I don't know how it works, but water drips on stuff and leaves piles of stuff. Takes thousands of years. Perfectly ordinary."
"Is this the same kind of water that floats through the sky and gouges out big caves in rocks?" said the Dean.
Yes, obviously," said Rincewind.
"It's good luck for us that we only have the drinking and washing sort, then."
"Had," said Rincewind.
There were hurrying feet behind them, and a junior wizard ran up holding a plate covered with a lid.
"Got the last one," he said. "It's a gourmet pie, too."
He lifted the lid. Rincewind stared and swallowed.
Oh, dear.
"What's up?"
"Have you got some more of that beer? I think I might be losing concentration."
His cousin stepped forward, ripping the top off a can of funnel web.
"Cartwright, you cover that pie up and keep it warm. Rincewind, you drink this."
They watched him drain the tin.
"Right, mate," said the Arch-Chancellor. "How about a nice meat pie upside down in a big bowl of mushy green peas covered with tomato sauce?"
He looked at the colour change on Rincewind's face and nodded.
"You need another tin," he said firmly.
They watched him drink this.
"Okay," said the Arch-Chancellor after a while. "Now, Rincewind, how about a nice one of Fairgo's pie floaters, eh? Meat pie in a pea soup and tomato sauce."
Rincewind's face twitched a bit as amber blessings shut down vital protective systems.
"Sounds good," he said. "Maybe with some coconut on the top?"
The wizards relaxed.
"So now we know," said Arch-Chancellor Rincewind. "We've got to keep you just drunk enough so the Dibbler's pies sound tasty, but not so drunk that it causes lasting brain damage."
"That's a very narrow window we got there," said the Dean.
Bill looked up at the roof where the shadows danced among the stalactites, unless they were stalagmites.
"This is right under the city," he said. "How come we've never heard of it?"
"Good question," said the Dean. "The man who built the cellar must have seen it."
Rincewind tried to think.
"It wasn't here then," he said.
"You said these stalag things took thousands of..."
"They probably weren't here last month, but now they've been here for thousands of years," said Rincewind.
He hiccuped.
"It's like your tower," he said. "Taller on the outside."
"Eh?
Probably only works here," said Rincewind. "The more geography you've got, the less history. Ever notice that? More space, less time. I bet it only took a second or two for this place to be here for thousands of years, see? Shorter on the outside. Makes perfect pence."
"I don't think I've drunk enough beer to understand that," said the Dean.
Something nudged him in the back of the legs. He looked down at the luggage. It was one of its habits to come up so close behind people that when they looked down they felt seriously overfeated.
"All this," he added.
The wizards grew quieter as Rincewind led them onward. He wasn't sure who was leading him, still.
"No worries."
Contrary to the usual procedures, it began to grow lighter. Although the proliferation of luminous fungi or iridescent crystals in deep caves where the torchlessly improvident hero needs to see is one of the most obvious intrusions of narrative causality into the physical universe. In this case, the rocks were glowing, not from some mysterious inner light, but simply as though the sun were shining on them just after dawn. There are other imperatives that operate on the human brain. One says, the bigger the space, the softer the voice, and refers to the natural tendency to speak very, very quietly when stepping into somewhere huge. So when Arch-Chancellor Rincewind stepped out into the big cave, he said,
"Struth, it's bloody big,"
in a low whisper. The Dean, however, shouted,
"Cooey!"
because there's always one. Stalactites crowded the cave here too, and in the very centre a gigantic stalactite had almost touched its mirror image stalagmite. The air was chokingly hot.
"This isn't right," said Rincewind.
Plink! They spotted the source of the noise eventually. A tiny trickle was making its way down the side of the stalactite and forming droplets that fell a few feet to the stalagmite. Another drop formed while they watched and hung there. One of the wizards clambered up the dry slope and peered at it.
"It's not moving," he said. "The trickle's drying up. I think it's evaporating."
The Arch-Chancellor turned to Rincewind.
"Well, we've followed you this far, mate," he said. "What now?"
"I think I could do with another beer."
"There's none left, mate."
Rincewind looked desperately round the cave, and then at the huge translucent mass of limestone in front of him. It was definitely pointy. It was also in the centre of the cave. It had a certain inevitability about it. Odd, really, that something like this would form down here, shining away like a pearl in an oyster. The ground trembled again. Up there, people would already be getting thirsty, cursing the windmills as only an Exian could curse. The water was gone, and that was very bad. And when the beer ran out, people would really get angry.